This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. And now, here are your hosts, Roger Morissette, Chad Campbell, Andrew Flanagan, Jeff Machado, and Keith Schmidt.
Talking swamp sweating. That's for the bathtub full of sweat.
Hello, sports fans. Welcome to the latest edition of the Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. I am your host, the cowboy, Roger Morissette, and the lounge is hopping tonight. We haven't been here for about 10 days, and it's been a crazy 10 days in the sports world, and I can't wait to dive into it with everyone. So like I said, the lounge is full. There's no room on the couches. I'm joined by the usual suspects, Mr. Andy Flanagan, Mr. Keith Schmidt, Mr. Chad Campbell, and Mr. Jeff Machado.
Excuse me, that seat's taken.
The cigar smoke is thick. The music's loud. And life is good. So like I said, it's been a crazy, crazy 10 days in the sports world. And tonight we're going to talk about the Decision 2.0, LeBron James returning to the hometown Cleveland Cavaliers. We're going to take a look at the Major League Baseball AL West division, which is all of a sudden the hot division in baseball with some recent trade activity. We're going to take a look back at the World Cup and Germany's victory over Argentina. We are also going to look at MMA, so we're going to review the Weidman-Machida middleweight title fight that was one for the ages and take a look at that whole card and also take a look at what's coming up in the future. And then last but not least, we're going to break down how the Sports Lounge is going to cover the NFL for you with the season about 2 months out, where we're going to break it down. And you know, this is where you want to be for football coverage, because we are the experts. So, again, welcome to the Thinking Man Sports Podcast here on PlaceToBeNation.com, and we're just going to dive right in, and we're going to start out with what not only was the biggest story of the last 10 days in the sports world, probably the biggest story overall in the country, and that was LeBron James making his decision to leave the Miami Heat, who he led to four straight NBA finals with two titles. And heading back home to Cleveland.
Taking my ball and going home.
So, again, this decision's been discussed ad nauseum, but we're going to break it down here on the Sports Lounge. And I'll start us off. And I'm proud of LeBron. It's the best way I can say it. I've killed the guy. I strongly disliked kind of disliked him as a person after what he did to... what I felt like he did to Cleveland with the last decision 4 years ago. I've always respected him as a basketball player. I think he's a point guard in Karl Malone's body. I mean, he's the best player we've had since Michael Jordan, and I think he's pretty clearly the best player in the NBA. And I love watching him play, which is I think why the decision kind of hurt so much more that this guy would do that to a city that doesn't have a whole lot going for it.
Bastards.
The people at Cleveland didn't need that. I've really enjoyed rooting against the Heat for the last 4 years, and those 2 years they didn't win the finals. I was a huge Mavericks fan the first year, and I was a huge Spurs fan this year. And neither one of those are my favorite teams. But with all that said, I'm proud of him for what he did for staying out of the spotlight this time while he was making the decision. And then I thought the essay that he submitted through Sports Illustrated was just spot on. Made me cry a little bit, honestly.
Cockamamie bullshit.
The way he talks about his hometown and what that means to him, and I mean, particularly talking about the third graders that he supports there, and you know, maybe the fact that you know, because he's there, maybe a guy who's from Cleveland is going to stay there and start a business. I like that. The fact that, you know, he... I mean, these people burned his jersey, and I mean, basically did everything short of, you know, like, egg his car on the way into the... the arena.
They should've.
And he doesn't run from it. He brings it up, and says, you know, while that hurt, I can understand it, because if it was my sports hero leaving town, how would I feel about it, right? And so, much love, much respect, just for the decision itself. I'm certainly not a Cavs fan, but I'm gonna be pulling for him to take a title back to the people of Cleveland. I think they deserve it.
Well, I'm gonna jump in real quick and say this: A, I'm not proud of him. B, you should have never left if that's the way you feel about Cleveland. And C, I hope your team sucks. Keep going.
Thanks, Keith. And, Andy, how do you feel about it?
I'm more on your side on this one. I think it's a good move for him. And, you know, it's a nice story in terms of him coming home, but I think this is really just the smartest decision for him basketball-wise, because, you know, if he went back to the Heat with the quickly or rapidly declining Dwayne Wade, I don't think that was going to be a good situation. And if he jumped out for some other team, then he would have, you know, he would have gone down in history as the basketball mercenary, always going to new teams, trying to win a title. So all around, this was a smart decision for him, and I'm glad that it has worked out where he kind of like rebuilds his image a little bit after the decision.
Right. And looking at the basketball side of it, I'm not 100% sure that I think maybe for the long term, Andy, that Cleveland is obviously for the long term built a little better than the Heat. But LeBron's not a spring chicken. He's got a lot of miles on the tires. Mm-hmm. And this is a young team. I mean, Kyrie Irving, who is a very good player, who when he was the best player on the team, they can't win more than 30 games, right?
Right.
Wiggins looks like he's got all the talent in the world and does have all the talent in the world, but I mean, he's pretty raw.
Yeah.
I mean, the only real playoff tested guy they have other than LeBron is Barajau, who's a guy I really like. And I think he was wasting away. He doesn't belong on a 30 win team, right? He's a guy who belongs in game 6, game 7, you know, balls of steel, rebound. He's a mini, you know, he's a Rodman type, and I like him.
Real good piece.
But, you know, Tristan Thompson, he's shown some flashes, but is he ready for Game 7 of the NBA Finals? Dion Waiters, not ready for Game 7 of the NBA Finals. So I think basketball-wise, LeBron took on quite a challenge here that, I mean, and they had the most dysfunctional locker room in the NBA, too. I mean, even like Lawal Deng, who is, by all accounts, the best teammate in the NBA, one of the best locker room guys in the NBA, went there and can't wait to get his ass out of there.
Because, which he just did.
Yeah, which he just did. So, I mean, I think a huge feather in LeBron's cap if he can bring this group of talented young individuals together and actually make them a winning team. And I guess the counter argument to that is he's got a lot more there than when he was in Cleveland the first time. And that's true. But when he was in Cleveland the first time, I think he was a little better than he is now. I mean, he's grown as a basketball player now, but he was his athletically, you can watching him play, you can see there's been a little bit of a decline there. So, what do you think, Andy? You think he'll what do you think's going to happen to Cleveland next year? You think finals? You think championship? You think second round playoff exit? Provided there's no catastrophic injuries, and provided they don't get Kevin Love.
I think. Said it. Assuming the East is not going to take like a big jump forward, I think it's probably going to be clearly the weaker conference again next year.
That's a pretty safe assumption, Andy.
I think anything less than conference finals is a big disappointment if you have LeBron on your team. But like you said, these are really young, raw guys. And if we're going by basketball history, it usually takes those guys, you know, a full playoff run or two before they start developing the skills and habits or whatever, the intangibles that you need to win a championship. So I don't think they're winning next year. I think they should be happy to win the year after that, I would say.
And I think to put it... go ahead, Keith. I'm going to apologize.
I would say what you see now is not what you're going to get. Wiggins, I don't think, will play a single minute for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think he's going to get traded.
They've come
out.
I think
there's going to be a Kevin Love type deal. Who else? Who else is out there? I'm not sure, but this will not be the team that takes the opening tip.
You think it's a smokescreen? Because they said, I mean, they've come out vehemently and said, we're not trading Wiggins for Love. We want Love, but we're not giving up Wiggins.
Then that's kind of pissing in the wind right there. I mean, you signed LeBron James, that means you want to win now.
But I think the thought...
Andrew Wiggins, great player. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he could end up being a great player. But what kind of return can you get for him? Minnesota's, their ears must be perked up real high right now saying, hey, wait a minute. We can get the first pick in the draft. And your first round pick, and who knows what else they can get from them. I don't see this being the team they take the floor with when the season starts.
Cowboys got a conspiracy theory. You guys ready for it? So, Kevin Love is obviously has one more year left on his deal, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And so, part of trading for Kevin Love is that you need to be able to sign him to an extension. So. Do you think that Kevin Love and LeBron maybe have talked? And Kevin Love have said, I'm not signing an extension with anybody.
Could be.
And then I'm going to play with you and Wiggins.
Could be.
But yeah, that wouldn't be any weirder than the big three from Miami, right?
Hmm?
That would mean getting rid of Kyrie Irving. Because he just signed a big deal.
Oh, they can pay him. They can afford
No, but
him.
They can't afford all of them. Not Love, LeBron.
Varish out. If they get rid of Varejão,
Minnesota's you can't build around Varejão. Varejão is a very
but
good
Minnesota's
piece to put in
got,
place.
Minnesota won't be able to say anything about it at the end of the year. Love's a free agent.
Well, if you're talking next year, yes.
I'm talking next year.
Right now, this year.
This year, he's not. Love's not playing for the Cavs this year.
We'll see.
That's my prediction. But I would say that I think I'm with you, Andy. Conference finals. I think that team, as currently constructed, has a lot of trouble with the Pacers. Just a grizzled veteran team. I think that's really the antidote for those young guys, you know, to beat those young guys.
And, does Roy Hibbert stay in Indiana?
They're shopping him. I don't know how much they can get for him at this point after the tank job he pulled.
Right, but I think that's a big difference, though. Because with Hibbert playing well, Indiana is very good.
Yeah. With him playing,
without him,
with him playing marginally well, I think guy like Paul George, and if the Lance Stephenson thing is a big deal, of course. But Paul George, David West, and just the type of team Indiana is going to be tough for the Cavs to overcome. But LeBron wasn't the only big news. So the Bulls, while losing out on Carmelo. Added I think this one's really flown under the radar, frankly. And Paul Gasol. So Bulls added Paul Gasol. So their front line's going to be Gasol, Noah, and Taj Gibson with Derrick Rose running the point. And assuming Rose comes back at full strength, which seems to be a good bet, how do you think they stack up, Andy?
Well, that's the you kind of. You know, you hit the important part. It's all about whether Rose is going to be, you know, is he 50% of what he used to be? Is he going to be 90% of what he used to be? It really remains to be seen. But I agree. I like that signing, that Gasol signing, because he's obviously, you know, he's coming in on the twilight of his career. So he needs to kind of take a secondary role somewhere. And that's a team that definitely could use some offensive creativity, which he can probably provide. I do worry there's some overlap because... Noah took a big step forward on the offensive end last year. But, you know, Gasol has been one of the best offensive players in the game, so it could work out really well.
And I think the way he's worked on is on his pick and pop game in L.A. as part mm-hmm. of the triangle. I mean, he's become a deadly mid-range jump shooter, kind of that Chris Boshy type of role mm-hmm. where... I think you can play him and Noah together. I mean, Noah doesn't really need to be more than 2 feet from the basket doing the garbage man work. And you put Gasol 20 feet away, and I mean, he's a great shooter, he's a great passer. And they'll be able to manage his minutes, too.
That's important for them.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, and Jim, I don't know what you think about Jimmy Butler, but he's another guy who's just a lunch pail. You know, what they were severely lacking was scoring, and... In essence, they're bringing in Derrick Rose and Pau Gasol, which, you know, in theory, is 55 points a game, right?
Right.
Don't forget McBuckets.
Yeah, and Dougie McDermott. Yeah, he's. I think he's a valuable. That's a great point, Keith, because I think he's a perfect situation for him, especially if Rose is right. If Rose is right and McDermott can just spot up on the outside and knock down threes, I can't think of too many better guys I'd rather have doing that.
It's true.
Yeah, I think it all depends on Derrick Rose's health and whether he can come back to even 80% of what he was.
I mean, they're saying this isn't, he's not coming off the ACL now. It's a different injury. They're saying that he's going to be all right. I mean, you never know with these things, and obviously two knee injuries in 2 years is never a good thing. And his game was so based on explosion and athleticism that it's tough.
The good part was, I mean, the injury is catastrophic no matter how old you are, but he's still so young where he can still come back from it. Right. It's not like he got hurt at 33.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And, you know, he's coming back an old man.
Yeah. And I think when you talk about the Bulls, you have to talk about their coach, too, who I think
Thibodeau.
Him and Popovich, to me, are the two best coaches in the NBA. What Thibodeau's done with what on paper looks awful. And I mean, I think the greatest accomplishment for him, and I think we might have talked about this before, was beating that Nets team with the best player on the floor for the Bulls being Nate Robinson, and then taking game one in Miami with that same team 2 years ago. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, he was trotting Rip Hamilton's rotting corpse out there during that series and still getting the job done.
Yeah, they say defense wins championships, and he's one of the best defensive coaches around. So. Yeah.
And, you know, so we had some guys change teams that we just spoke about. Then we had one guy, the other marquee guy, that we were convinced the best thing for him would be to leave New York. Well, Carmelo's back and as a Knick. And there was a lot of posturing and a lot of this, a lot of that. And I actually like Carmelo's game probably more than some other people. I don't think he's a selfish player. I think he's in a situation where he has to shoot all the time because the rest of the team isn't very good. But I think all this posturing and him considering going to the Bulls, I think at the end of the day, he just took where he could make the most money. And he tried to... You know, use the media to make it seem as though that's not what he was doing, but I think it was pretty transparent once the process started that he wasn't going to be willing to take that pay cut to win. And the Knicks gave him a max deal, and that was that. And maybe he believes in Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson, who, frankly, didn't seem all that excited about bringing him back. You know, what do you think, Andy?
Yeah, like you said, the kindest view of Carmelo is that, you know, he believes in Phil Jackson and Derek Fisher and thinks they're actually building something here. Which, I mean, there's some positive signs. You know, they get a Cle Anthony early in the draft who looked like a pretty good value pick at that point. And you know,
they traded for Ray Felton.
They dumped Ray Felton.
Jose Calderon, who I think is a good fit.
I do like Jose Calderon. He's getting up there, though.
He can't guard me.
That's Carmelo's type of point guard, though.
Yeah,
true.
He doesn't want to shoot. He wants to pass. So
yeah.
Ray Felton was more interested in the post-game buffet than...
Yeah. Let me drive the lane and see what happens.
I'm just glad Carmelo didn't end up in L.A. That seemed like the biggest waste of time. Like, going from a bad situation to a worse one seemed like a horrible idea for him.
It's the Jedi mind trick with Phil Jackson right there. He put it on him, you know. You don't want to go there and be second fiddle to Kobe. You don't want to go be second fiddle to LeBron. You want to be here in New York, big spotlight. You're the man. Please come back. He got him.
I think what Stephen A. Smith said, I think, may be true. I think I think Carmelo would have gone to Miami. I think he Stephen A. Smith's theory was that LeBron was waited to make the decision because he was waiting for Bosch to sign with Houston because he didn't want him to be that third member of the Big Three anymore.
Oh, and, really?
Yeah, they didn't want him to be the third member of the Big Three anymore, but he didn't want to be the bad guy to come out and say that. So the Heat left the offer on the table, and when Bosch didn't sign with Houston, then LeBron decide, or when it was clear Bosch was going to wait until LeBron actually signed the paper before he made a decision. But that if Bosch went to Houston, they were going to try to work Carmelo into Miami, and Wade said all along he'd be very flexible with his salary. And I think that's a pretty good segue into what the Heat did. So I think a lot of organizations would have handled it quite a bit differently than they did. Within minutes of LeBron signing in Cleveland, I mean, they dusted themselves off and got right back on the horse. Bosch, max deal for Bosch. I think a lot of people don't like it, but I mean, I think it's tough for an alpha dog, for a guy who's always been the best player, to come in and be the third guy. Yeah. And I think he filled the role admirably, you know? I mean, I point to when those guys weren't playing, when LeBron was out, right? Or even when it was just LeBron and Bosch with Wade out, Bosch always raised his game and played like more of that stud. And I think, I don't think they're winning the title by any stretch, but I think they're going to be better than people think. And I really, really like the Luol Deng signing. He's not LeBron, but he plays the same position. So they still have their
defense.
The defense, and he's a great character guy. And he can still play, and he can hit open threes, and he can run the floor. If they can get decent point guard play, which we've talked about again on here, I think in the East they have a realistic shot. I mean, you figure Chicago, Cleveland, and Indiana are probably a cut above. But I mean, they have just as good of a shot as any is at the four seed. I mean, I think they're just as good as the Nets. Andy?
The Nets suck.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say. Yeah, they're probably better than the Nets. I mean, where are the Nets going, really?
Nowhere.
Especially now that they lost Paul Pierce.
Yeah. And, you know, Garnett's pretty clearly on his last legs, and I'm not sure what Brook Lopez is. I mean, there's enough injury concern there that I wouldn't just, you know, say that he's going to be a star again.
Right. Big guys with foot injuries, there's not a lot of positive.
Yeah, right. I'm still a little mystified by the Heat. I think you put a really nice positive spin on it. To me, it just seemed like they kind of panicked. They didn't think LeBron was leaving, and then when he did, they're like, oh shit, what do we do now? And just threw a bunch of money at Bosch, but I could be wrong. Your view is equally valid.
I agree.
All right, hey, we'll see. I mean, I've made my a lot of time, had a lot of fun rooting against the Heat. So if they suck again, I'm okay with that.
You know? Well, it's a 7-year rule. You gotta root against them for the next 7 years. That's just the way it goes.
And, looking out west, I think the Lakers. Talk about striking out. I mean, talk about the rich becoming just the poor. And you got to think that that Kobe's got a rep that nobody wants to play with him, right? I mean, after what happened with Dwight Howard, and now, I mean, the biggest moves they made were re-upping Swaggy P and and Jordan Hill. I mean, they're in big, big trouble. I mean, I think even if Kobe comes back and turns back the clock 5 years, I mean, their roster's constructed the same way the roster was constructed when he would average 37 points a game or whatever. And
they'd win 30 games.
And they'd win, 42 and 40 and get swept by the Suns in the first round of the playoffs.
Can I conject here for a second?
Of course.
It's not so much who wants to come and play with Kobe. It's in their heads, I'm going to have to replace Kobe. And I don't want to do that. That's a no-win situation right there.
Right.
If you go to L.A. and you're not named LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, you're not replacing Kobe Bryant. So no matter if you average 27 points a game with 10 rebounds, it doesn't matter. You're not Kobe. You'll be booed out of the palace.
I think it speaks volumes that Carmelo didn't he didn't even really seem to consider it.
I thought he did. I thought they were kind of like the leader in the clubhouse for a little while there, weren't they?
It seemed like a smoke screen, though.
Yeah, right. That was just bargaining position for him.
Right. I mean, it's a sad state of affairs there. I mean, Kobe's, I mean, the only, you would think they would at least try to surround him with a bunch of young talent. I do like Julius Randle, But, yeah. And then, I mean, he's chasing all these records, right? So, I mean, I guess that's going to be the reason to go to the games, and the reason to watch the game is to see Kobe shoot the ball 40 frickin' times every game.
Yeah.
And go after records. But they're certainly not going to be a winning team. And I'd be remiss if we didn't say this when we're talking about the West, too, but, you know, as some of you know, the sports loungers, we're up here in the Northeast, and for Andy and I in particular, a guy named Bryce Cotton has a special place in our hearts, and he's lighting up the summer league for San Antonio, and looks like he's got a real good shot to stick there. So if you're not from around here, keep an eye on Bryce. The kid can play. He's a Patty Mills 2.0 with a little more athletic ability.
Yeah, it's a good place for backup point guards.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't be in a better situation.
He hit the lottery going to San Antonio, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's one. Sometimes when guys don't get drafted, it's a blessing. Because, I mean, you know, he could have ended out in...
the Lakers? I don't know.
could have ended out in Los Angeles, exactly.
Well, San Antonio's got an eye for talent, right?
So have you guys been watching any summer league or keeping up on
I haven't. Keeping up
on the summer league at all?
Andy? I see some highlights every now and then, but I don't pay much attention to that stuff, man.
So Kentavious Caldwell Pope has been the star of the summer league so far.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, absolutely. He's averaging like 28 points a game. He was the first round pick for the Pistons last year. So we'll see what happens there. A lot of times these guys who are summer league standouts tend to flame out. But it has been an interesting to see some of the rookies. Marcus Smart's been getting a lot of run for the Celtics, and you know, we now have two point guards who can't shoot for the Celtics. So, watching him play, he's not as athletic as Rondo. They bring different things to.
He's bigger,
more physical. Great going to the rack. I mean, he's a strong kid, but he can't shoot his way out of a paper bag. And I mean, they say they're going to play the two of those guys together, and you just can't. You can't have two starting guards that the defense sags 10 feet off of. I mean,
it's not a good recipe, though.
No, I mean, it's just. But I do like him as a player, and I know the Rockets have expressed some interest in Rondo, and I hope. I think for the greater good of the Celtics, they'll be getting rid of him soon.
And speaking of the Rockets, we should at least mention, right, that they're kind of the big losers of this offseason.
Huge losers. So, yeah, it's a great point, Andy. To recap what happened to the Rockets, they thought they were going to get Chris Bosh, and then he spurned them for Miami. And they did not match the offer sheet for Chandler Parsons and brought in an older, probably not as good Trevor Ariza.
And they traded away their, you know, two of their assets in Jeremy Lin and Omar Asik. Asik, is that it?
Ashik,
thank you. I knew that wasn't right.
Ashik.
They basically gave them away to clear up the cap space to sign Bosh, and then ended up with nothing. And that really hurts.
Yeah, I mean, they seem like one piece away. It's got to be so frustrating.
And that Bosh fit was so perfect, too, because they already have the rim protector in Howard, so Bosh could just be out there being the athletic other forward spot.
Right, absolutely.
And it would have been so great. That's too bad.
I mean, doesn't it speak a little bit to what LeBron did? That Bosh, I mean, that was he's been sort of, I mean, he has not been exactly a fan favorite in Miami.
No, that's true.
And so, I mean, he was going to a place that they would worship the ground that he walked on. He wouldn't even have to be the main guy. Harden's the main guy and perfectly suited his talents. But at the end of the day, he and his wife decided it was more important to stay in South Beach.
And be the man.
And Houston and is...
He'll be the man now.
Yeah, that's true. There's something to that.
Lucky he wasn't Toronto.
And Houston is supposed to be a bit of a happening city. Certainly more of a desirable destination than Cleveland, and again with no state taxes in Texas. Yeah. So, props to LeBron again. No other superstar goes to Cleveland under any circumstances. Now that he's there, they might be able to get another one.
This might be my selective memory, but I can't think of a big free agent ever going to Cleveland in any sport.
No, well, as we talked about with Mr. Grandy, Cleveland's next best player after LeBron in the history of the franchise is it's either Mark Price or Brad Daugherty.
That's right.
Right? I mean, that's... And they drafted both of those guys, and they weren't, neither one of those were exactly Hollywood. So, all right. Excellent stuff, guys. Excellent stuff. I'm real excited to see how this plays out. I'm a basketball junkie at heart, and I watch a lot of Summer League. So for the next show, you guys should watch some Summer League so we can talk some Summer League. Not to beat the hometown drum again, but even Kadeem Batts, who was not very good for the Friars, is starting for Orlando and making
some noise.
Oh, really? Starting for Orlando in the Summer League. He's a stretch four. He doesn't shoot very well.
So I'm going to say.
But, we love you. We love you.
In the last couple months.
We love you, Kadeem. So, on that note, we'll go to break here, listen to some of the other great podcasts here at Place to Be Nation. Again, if you're tuning into a sports podcast here, we suggest you start with the Sports Lounge.
But start with us!
There are a number of other great podcasts, whether you're into wrestling, pop culture, whatever the case may be. So take a listen, and we'll be back shortly with the AL West.
Back.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, we'll be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling, we talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Parv. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
Like we always do with this time. I go for mine. I get to shine. Now throw your hands up in the sky. Go for mine. I get to shine. Now throw your hands up in the sky.
Well, folks, welcome back to the Sports Lounge. Hope everyone enjoyed the NBA segment. And now we're going to talk some baseball. As we've been doing in our weekly feature, we're going through each division of the major leagues. And it just so happens that this week is the AL West for us here at the Sports Lounge. Perfectly timed, I might add, with the trade just a few days ago of Jeff Samardzija and Jason Hammel over to the Oakland A's, who are already sitting in first place and now seem real poised to possibly run away with the division, or at the very least, they're Billy Bean's putting all his chips in the middle, which is not something Billy Bean always does. So, with us as always is Keith Schmidt, our MLB expert, also joined by Andy again. So, Keith, what do you make of the division so far? Let's talk about that trade first. We've been talking about Samardzija moving, but a bit of a surprise to have him go to Oakland.
Well, Oakland struck quick. I mean, they were the first of all the teams to make a substantial trade. They gave up quite a bit. They gave up Addison Russell, who was the number one prospect in their system, along with another first-round pick in McKinney, who's an outfielder. But they got Jeff Samardzija, who was, besides David Price, probably the best pitcher available on the market. And they got Jason Hamill, which I don't think his numbers will equate to the American League like they were in the National League, but he's still a pretty good pitcher, though. He'll give you innings, you know, limit the runs given up. And, you know, it's funny, they got him listed as their number two pitcher on their depth chart right now, the Oakland A's do. I think that might be just to kind of lift his spirits a bit. But, no, they have a really good pitching staff in Oakland, and they're going to be tough to beat. They've been the best team in the league so far, and I don't see the second half being too much different.
As an aside, you mentioned Addison Russell, right? Yep. Shortstop, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So if you didn't tune into the last Sports Lounge, we were taking a look at the NL Central, and namely the Chicago Cubs, and we thought they already had too many young shortstops. So
and they do. They added to it. This is amazing.
So how do you talk about that, Keith? How do you feel about what do you think Theo's doing there?
Well, I mean, he's backloading his system with as many talented players as he can.
Kind of an asset accumulation.
If they all play the same position, oh well. But this brings up an interesting thing with Starlin Castro, because now they have two legitimate shortstop prospects. I wouldn't doubt to see Castro move. I don't know if he'll move this year because those guys are not ready to come up yet. Next year at the deadline, we might be talking about a Castro deal. That's the free space for either Russell or Baez, whichever will play shortstop. You got Chris Bryant at third base. One of those guys could slide over to third and one goes to the outfield, but you still have three players, two positions kind of deal. I think Theo is setting up a trade for some pitching, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that.
He's got you know, four, well, I shouldn't say that, three legit prospects or major leaguers already, counting Castro, Baez, and Russell. One of those guys is going for a stud pitcher, if not two.
That's not Jeff Samardzija.
No, well, that younger is on Jeff Samardzija's level, but under control.
Okay,
good. Under control, you know.
Maybe makes a whole lot of sense. What do you think of the Samardzija deal, Andy?
I liked it. That was a really smart move, I thought. You know, it seemed like the A's didn't really need pitching because their ERA is like second in the majors or something like that, right? But, you know, there are some holes popping up there, and they don't totally know what they're going to get from Sonny Gray overall. Like, he's been good so far, but you know, he might run into an inning cap at some point. So I think it was smart. And, you know, they have the best team in baseball going by the numbers. So if you're going to go for it, this is the year to go for it.
Yeah. Again, lots of credit to Bean. It's not generally the A's way. And just something that stuck out to me with them getting the two pitchers. Yes, they had the second best ERA in baseball. But you mentioned it, Andy. Sonny Gray, innings cap. Scott Kazmir, not exactly a picture of health throughout his career. And it was a real possibility that as the season wore on, that pitching could come back down to earth. And I think that by adding these two guys, they've cemented, even if Kazmir goes down, they probably still have the best staff in the American League. So I'm with you guys.
Depth-wise, they definitely do.
Yeah, great. Great trade, and I mean, we can just segue right into the A's. They're sitting in first place, game and a half up on the Angels. Another guy I think you got to talk about with the A's is Sean Doolittle coming out of nowhere, and yeah. It's, I mean, what a fantastic closer he's been.
He made the All Star team. I mean, this guy was a set up guy. They signed Jim Johnson to big money.
Yeah.
In fact, they paid him a lot of money. He came in, and it didn't take Melvin long to say, hey, guess what, Mel? Take a seat in the sixth inning. Have a nice day. Doolittle has come on really, really, really strong. He's a very good pitcher. They have a solid team top to bottom. Offense, defense, pitching, all of it. They're going to be a team to reckon with when it comes down to the end. I mean, health will play a big factor. Sonny Gray, you were talking about his innings limit. I was telling Roger before we started the podcast, I wouldn't doubt to see a little phantom DL stint coming just to give him a couple of weeks to, you know, save some bullets for the end. And, you know, Jason Hamill allows them to do that because he can slide right into Sonny Gray's spot. You know, they don't miss a beat. Well, and come postseason, this will be a tough team.
If
Samardzija and Kazmir are healthy in the postseason, they'll match anybody's 1-2.
And, I mean, they moved, I believe, Tommy Malone to the pen, right?
Correct.
I mean, he's no world beater, but he's certainly a quality number five starter.
Right.
That they can just slide right in.
They strengthen their bullpen even more. And they have insurance policies.
And so let's talk about the lineup a little bit.
Is the Red Sox West?
Is that what it is? Yeah, I mean, again, you know, they're given that the Red Sox can't hit anything, it's a little frustrating for some, I
say that because Coco was in the Red Sox system, Brandon Moss,
Jed Lowry,
Josh Reddick. So
other than that, nobody. The Sox never had Cespedes.
This is true.
I like this lineup a lot.
Yes,
You know, most of them high OBP guys, which is something you would expect from Mr. Bean. I did not mean to call him Mr. Bean.
Billy.
So, Josh Donaldson's having a hell of a year, and I think he can keep it up. Brandon Moss is cheap power for them. I mean, he's great, really good hitter. Cespedes, honestly, has been a little bit of a disappointment, frankly. I mean, I think he hasn't been bad by any stretch, but he certainly hasn't lived up to the billing that you might expect him to coming into the season. What do you think, Keith?
Cespedes is contributing. I think he hasn't reached his peak. He will get even better than he is. I mean, he's got 14 homers, 56 RBI. His batting average leaves a little, but he's got a cannon in left field.
Those plays he makes.
Oof. Oh, it's unbelievable. It's like he almost dares people. I dare you to go.
Drop the ball on purpose so I can be at a sports center.
Coco Crisp is a gold glove center fielder. His arm is terrible, but he can get to anything in center. Anything. Brandon Moss, it's funny, I just watched his interview on MLB Network a few hours ago, and he said what happened was he went to Pittsburgh before he went to Oakland, and he struggled mightily.
Right, remember.
And the hitting coach said, okay, strip it down to basics. You're trying to do too much. Open your stance back up like you did when you were in the minors. And he said within a week, boom. He's hitting the ball out of the ballpark again. So, I mean, this guy is a legit power threat. They got three catchers on this team. And the way they use them, the way they rotate them in and out, it's brilliant. Right-handed, left-handed. They probably have the best catching tandem in the league when you consider backups.
Jason
and
Norris.
Josh Donaldson is the best player nobody's ever heard of, unless you follow Oakland baseball. That guy's a legit stud at third base. Jed Lowry's solid at short. I love this team. I really do. But they have a team crawling up their rear end. A team that should have been there 2 years ago but hasn't, but is now showing up in the Anaheim Angels.
Angels, winners of 9 of 10, game and a half back. You know, but personally, I don't think they can keep it up.
I hate to say it.
We tend to disagree, Keith, and you tend to be right. That's why you're the MLB expert, and I'm the lowly cowboy. But I just don't see it. I don't see it with these guys. I see it by, you know, I like Trout as much as the next guy. I think the pitching is really what sets apart the A's versus the Angels. I think the stat, there's just such a disparity there that I don't think. And barring two injuries to the Oakland staff, I don't think the Angels are going to catch them.
Well, it depends on what happens in the trade market. That's what I say. As constituted now, no, you're right. Oakland will probably pull away because their pitching is that much better than Anaheim's or LA's. Excuse me. But
I know what you meant.
Right, but the people in LA get pissed off about that, I guess. I don't know. But if they make a trade, bring in a pitcher like, I don't know, maybe David Price, dare I say. But even just a number one, two, three type pitcher to go along with Weaver. Garrett Richards is, he's coming out of his shell now.
He's been great.
You know, he's been pitching like an ace. And I think they need a little bullpen help. But their offense is that much better than anyone else's in this division. And when you're lining up Trout, Pujols, and Josh Hamilton, forget it.
So, pitching-wise, as good as Richards has been, it's been offset by how bad C.J. Wilson has been. Right? I mean, that's, again, just my opinion, but if you look at Wilson's completely imploded over the last month and a half or so. I mean, just.
But there was an injury, which is why he's on the DL now. So yeah. Who knows? He might have pitched 3, 4, 5 starts with that injury and tried to make it through it. So, I mean, his track record says he's a good pitcher. You know, and when you're pitching with that offense, you don't have to throw shutouts. Quality stop. Give him a quality stop, you'll get the W.
That lineup is a murderer's row.
Yes.
Maybe
yes.
Trout, Trout's not the best everyday player in the league, he's top five.
Let me state this for the record. Mike Trout is the best player in Major League Baseball. Hands down, there's no other. Not even Miguel Cabrera, not Giancarlo Stanton, none of them can do what he does. All around. No one.
You know, Pujols is certainly... You know, he's not quite what he was in St. Louis, but he's having a good year. Hitting in the heart of that lineup helps, of course.
Yes. His power numbers are back. His average is down compared to when he was the quote unquote machine. But I mean, you know, he's old, getting old, I should say. But I mean, he's producing big time. Josh Hamilton started out like a firecracker, but then he slid into first base like a dumbass. Broke his thumb. He was out for whatever 6-8 weeks. But now he's back and he's hitting the ball all over again. So I'm telling you, that lineup is nothing nice. Eric Ibar, Howie Kendrick, David Fries. You know, that lineup's pretty good.
What do you think, Andy? You like the Angels?
I think Andy's sleeping. He doesn't like the Angels, but. The other thing I will say about this team they have to pitch. They have to fix the rotation. They lost Ervin Santana, which was a big pitcher for them. They lost him to free agency. Now, Jared Weaver is pitching better than he was. Garrett Richards is probably the ace of their staff right now, but that's not enough to get you through a playoff. They might get to the playoffs. But if they go in with that rotation, C.J. Wilson, Richards, Weaver,
Skaggs can't be your three in the playoffs.
Right? He's a good pitcher. He will be in 2-3 years. You know, he might be their ace.
Oh, absolutely. No, and he's just a kid. He's only 22.
Right. He's only a kid right now, so you can't expect that from
him. I mean, they had huge problems at the end of their bullpen, but Joe Smith has stepped in and pitched very well.
I think they swindled Pittsburgh with the Frieri for Grilly.
Grilly still got it.
Frieri has never been a good pitcher. He's always sucked. He's always had potential, but he's always sucked. Grilly, last year was an all-star closer. He had a bad stretch.
Right.
You know.
He was hurt, too.
They gave up on him. They threw Melanson in the deal in the closer role in Pittsburgh. And they traded Grilly for Frieri.
Yeah.
That was dumb.
Those guys evidently
That's why you're the Pittsburgh Pirates.
They met up with each other in the airport, you know, in between. You know, and they
Grilly might end up closing games for them towards the end of the year.
Yeah, if he finds, I mean, he was lights out last year.
Last year, he was one of the better closers in the league, for sure.
Right, so the way the West stacks up, you have those, you have the A's and the Angels, and then you have everybody else.
Tell me you're not going to pick on Seattle, are you? Please tell me you're not going to
The Cowboy wouldn't do that, no.
Cowboy.
So Andy, this is the Mariners. What do you think about the Mariners? They spent a lot of money on a certain second baseman in the offseason, someone I know is near and dear to you. do you think it made sense for them to do that? Do you think it's panned out the way they've wanted it to?
I think they obviously would like it if he could rediscover his power, but I think in this day and age, in this this market for baseball, you kind of have to overpay to draw guys like that to a team that hasn't had a lot of success lately. So I totally see where they were coming from, and I like the guy. I'm hoping Cano works out for them. It hasn't been quite the year they were hoping for, I'm sure, but he hasn't been a disaster either.
He's hitting 330.
Yeah.
Well, the guy's hitting.
Nothing to sneeze at.
Just no power right now. But, and my opinion, they opened that checkbook up, they brought in Cano, but they closed it too quickly. They needed to bring somebody else behind them. Think about if they would have signed Nelson Cruz. To bat behind.
Well, anybody could have Nelson Cruz. Right?
Well, this is what I'm saying, but he was linked to the Mariners during free agency, and they never signed him. If he was batting behind Cano, they'd be 5 to 6 games better record-wise right now. Because any time, think about it, the game's 2-1. Cano's coming up in the, 8th, 9th inning. What are you going to throw him?
Junk.
Sliders away. Sliders away. Good night. Take your base. Have a nice day. Now we'll see if Seager and the rest can do anything. Kyle Seager, he's another good hitter in their lineup. And after that, garbage. The rest of that lineup is garbage.
Brad Miller, I thought, would take a step up this year. He's been putrid. Garbage. He has been putrid. Corey Hart, I've never been much of a fan of.
Garbage.
And he's
got a great name.
That's about it.
Sunglasses at night, right?
Is yep, that's right.
But this team can pitch. They have the best pitcher on the planet. And that's right, I said that. Better than Kershaw, Felix Hernandez. The most steady pitcher over the last 6-7 years. This guy, if he played for a better team, probably would have won the Cy Young the last 5 years. That's how good he is. I mean, right now he's at the top in almost every category. I think he's behind in wins by 1, strikeouts by 6 or 7 to David Price. ERA, he's leading. WHIP, he's leading. He's 11-2. This guy is fantastic.
Great. On pace for 300.
Great. This guy's great. I love this guy. I wish my Red Sox could get him, but that's not going to happen.
Hernandez, definitely an ace.
Oh, absolutely.
They're two, the flying salmon, Shashi Iwakuma. He's fantastic. Too.
Yep.
So how much of this do you think is the ballpark? I mean, because we're talking about Robbie Cano can't hit it out. Their pitching's great. Felix Hernandez, yes. Felix Hernandez is going to be a stud wherever he pitches. But Chris Young, for example, coming off multiple bad injuries, he's got a 3.15 ERA, 1.10 WHIP. Maybe, he's pitching better than he has in the last 7 years.
Maybe he learned how to pitch. I mean, he pitched for the Mets, too, and that's a pitcher's paradise. So, and the Padres.
Yeah.
So you can't, don't put that on the ballpark. Robbie Cano's home runs on the ballpark, some of it, yes. Most of it is he's not getting nothing to hit. Mm. Why would you ever groove this guy a fastball? Ever. You won't. You will never do it. It's like, Giancarlo Stanton. Now, this year is probably a bad comparison. Because he's got, 22 home runs or whatever it is.
And no protection.
And no protection. Right. Same thing with Cano, but I think the pitchers in the National League think it doesn't matter if you hit 3 home runs today, we'll still beat you because your pitching sucks. Robbie Cano is not getting nothing to hit. He's taking what he can get. That's the type of hitter he is. Cano's not the guy to hit 450-foot light tower shots.
No.
He hits line drive home runs. He always did. So if he's getting the ball on the outer half of the plate, down and away,
he's going the other way.
He's going the other way, throwing it over the third baseman's head, get a double, knock in the run. He's still producing runs. He's just not hitting home runs. But my personal opinion, he's got nobody behind him.
It's a great, no one. Great analysis there, Keith. And I 100% agree with you. And I'm taking a deeper look at the Mariners rotation. I'm going to butcher his name, but Ronis Elias has been pretty good. Looks like he's got some potential there too. I think he can be better than what he's been too.
Yeah.
Like you said, Young, Felix Hernandez, Iwakuma. They go four deep. And Taiwan Walker, I really like him. Maybe he seems to be hitting a little speed bump here, but he's got good stuff.
He started the season on a DL. He just came back. He literally has made two starts so far.
They sent him down so he wouldn't miss his turn.
Right? Correct. And just to keep him on track. Just to keep him on track. He'll be back up next week. This kid is the real deal. You're going to be talking next year, Felix, Taiwan Walker as a 1-2 punch. With Iwakuma being the number three in that
rotation.
Wow,
that's a bold statement.
Watch. Mark my words.
Iwakuma finished third in the Cy Young last year, didn't he?
Did he?
I believe he did. Well, maybe I'm wrong.
He's going to be number three on his own team, huh? And they also have a left-hander, James Paxton. Yeah, same situation with him. He made a couple right starts and boom, he got hurt. But this team can pitch. They're number three in the league ERA-wise, right behind Oakland. I think Oakland is 3-1-4 and they're 3-1-6. Team ERA. So they have a good bullpen. That's another thing with Felix Hernandez. He'd probably have 20 more wins over his career if he had a legit closer behind him. This year they do. Rodney. He's got 11 wins. He's right there with the league leaders. I'm telling you, this Seattle team is two hitters away. A leadoff hitter and a power bat, cleanup type hitter. And they will take right off.
And frankly, if you throw them in the AL East, they're probably the favorite to win it right now.
Well, they got a better record, right? Don't they?
Very close. They would be slightly behind the Orioles.
Yeah, yeah. See? Right. Then, so that's kind of tough luck for them, right, with Oakland and Anaheim.
Right.
I keep calling them Anaheim. L.A. and their division. But I like the Seattle team. I just think that after they signed Cano, they should have spent that extra money. And even if they would have brought back their own, Kendrick Morales, somebody to bat behind Cano. They got nobody right now. Cano gets up in a jam, second and third, take your base. Absolutely. Have a nice day.
Looking at the rest of the division, the one team that's supposed to be down there and another that's a little bit of a surprise, but we'll start with the Astros, who... Ooh. Who at 40-56 are probably overachieving, or almost certainly overachieving, based on their roster. Yeah, similar scenario to what we talked about earlier with the Marlins, except to a larger degree. The Astros certainly have a plan, their plan is they're stockpiling assets and not spending any money. I think when you talk about them, the first, second, and third thing you're going to talk about is a guy named George Springer.
Hello. Love me some George Springer.
So, Andy, have you had a chance to see George George hit?
I've seen some highlights. I haven't seen him actually in game, though.
Well, he's a good player. He's a little, he's 24 years old, which is a little older for a rookie, and he started out a little slow, but he's the kid's got it.
He's got 19 home runs already. He came up late April and slumped his first 3 weeks.
Badly slumped.
Very bad. Like 0-for-42 type slump.
Yeah, and frankly, if you look at him, I think he's only got 5 steals, but the speed potential's there for at least 20. Mm-hmm. I mean, for 20 on the season. Yep. And he is a good piece. He is a good piece for them.
The future is looking real bright for the Astros. They're not going to contend this year. They're not going to contend next year. Possibly the year after. Year after that, watch out. That farm system is loaded like the Cubs.
Yeah, I mean,
They've been stockpiling first-round pick after first-round pick after first-round pick. Top picks, too. I'm talking number one, number two. Carlos Correa, I believe, is the shortstop prospect. Mark Appel, who's a pitcher, number one pitcher. The guy they just took this year, Aiken. I want to say his name was Brady Aiken.
Yeah, that sounds right.
he's got a little issue with his elbow or shoulder. He's going to require surgery, so we'll see what happens with that. But this team has prospects up the kazoo, and they're all about to come up. Not next year. Next year they won't be here. The year after that, they'll all be blossoming, and they're going to contend. I think so. As a matter of fact, Sports Illustrated, what cover was it? About a month ago, they had George Springer on the cover, and they in captions it was 2017 World Series champions. That's what their farm system is like. It's really, really good.
And that's what they're selling the fans, because they've taken a bit of heat for, I mean, they're spending so little money, right?
I mean, right, but I mean, hey, you know what? If you're not going to win, why spend the money? Save it. Scout with it. Send it over the international market. Buy some players from, you know, internationally. I'll tell you what. The other guy we haven't mentioned, John Singleton. He was another prospect. He's up right now. He's struggling a little bit. But this guy's got power. Moon light tower power. Isn't that what they call it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's and they got actually that. They actually did something kind of strange with him, didn't they? They locked him up, right? They signed him to, was it a 4 or 5 year contract?
Singleton.
Yes, John Singleton.
Yes, yes. They kind of the Evan Longoria plan.
Right.
Where we know you're gonna be a good player, so we'll sign you now, cut out those arbitration years.
It's a real smart move. First 2 years
of free agency. Yeah, if it pans out. I mean, crazy not to.
When you look at their staff, I think one guy who jumps out who, I mean, they probably didn't even think this guy was any good is Dallas Keuchel.
Keuchel.
He's he's emerged as a pretty, he's not going to be the ace for a contender, but he could be a solid three, right? For a contender. Right. And I like him a lot. I think Jared Cozart has some potential.
Mid-rotation kind of guy.
The bullpen's a mess, but as you would expect, the bullpen is a mess on a team.
If you look at all the losing teams, their main weakness is their bullpen. Look, the Cubs, same thing, right?
Right. Yeah.
Their bullpen completely sucks. So does the Astros.
Well, why? I mean, if you're not trying to win now, why are you going to spend money on
Exactly. Yeah, that's money, you know, better spent on scouting and prospects.
And Castro's having a bit of a down year, but I think he's got the
ability. Good catcher.
He's got the ability to be a solid catcher for a playoff team. Jose Altuve is. He's their best player.
He's their all-star.
Right. And he's a good little second baseman. He was him masquerading as the cleanup hitter like he was last year. Doesn't make sense.
This guy's leading the league in hits. I believe he's leading the league in stolen bases. If not, he might be number two behind D. Gordon. That kid is a hell of a player. Hell of a leadoff hitter right there.
Yeah. And you know,
so if you can envision 2 years down the road, Altuve leading off. You got, let's say, Carlos Correa batting second, Springer, John Singleton.
It's a lineup.
And they have outfield prospects that I don't even know their names, but they damn good.
And, I mean, it's funny with Altuve. He's been up for a while, but him and Springer are the same age.
Right.
24 years old. And, and you can really see an improvement with Altuve. We really should have talked about him before this, but he was being miscast, and they were hitting him in the middle of the lineup all year.
Yeah, they had him batting cleanup.
So he had 35 steals last year. This year, 41 already, only caught three times. Three times, I mean.
And the kid's only getting better.
Yeah, absolutely. So. I mean, this is, you know, Keith being a big Billy Hamilton guy, I think you're gonna hit your wagon to this guy.
Not only he's short and he plays second base. That's me right there.
This guy can steal bases. He can take a walk.
Yes, and, I love him.
He hits 330, not 220. So
hey now, Billy Hamilton's hitting 280. I know. Watch him out.
You got anything to add there on the Astros, Andy?
No, I think it's interesting their plan to kind of be Tampa Bay West out there, you know, suck for a couple of years and acquire a bunch of prospects. I'm interested to see how it's going to turn out, but there's not much interesting there at the moment.
You hit it right on the head, the Tampa Bay West. If you remember Tampa Bay, they were the Devil Rays.
Yeah, and they were atrocious.
Completely sucked. This team is actually showing more heart than the Devil Rays did. They're actually winning a couple of games here and there, and you know, after those, whatever, that 5-6 year period of finishing last place, 20 games out. All of a sudden, they're going to blossom and bring all these guys to light. David yeah. Price, James Shields, Ben Zobrist, Evan Longoria, you know, just like the Rays did.
Kyle Crawford.
That's what they're going to do.
Absolutely. All right, and so from a team that seems to have a plan and is built for the future, to the last place team, your Texas Rangers.
Oh.
So whereas the Astros may be Tampa Bay West, I think it's pretty clear the Rangers are the New York Mets West.
You know what, though? I don't think that's fair for the Texas Rangers.
Because of the injuries?
Injuries are never an excuse. Everybody always likes to say that. Don't use that as an excuse. Come on, man. They lost 8 or 9 legit starting players, including almost their whole rotation. Not to mention their cleanup hitter, their number 5 hitter, their number 2 hitter, their top prospect in the organization. They lost them all to injury. You can't.
I agree.
I'm sorry. You got to give them a mulligan.
I agree with you, Keith. I just wanted to, you know, twofold that comment. I wanted to get you going, and then just a little rib to our sister podcast, The Extra Point, which you guys should definitely check out as well. Scott and George do a great job over there, but they're big Mets guys. So anytime I can throw a little jab in there,
well, one Mets guy.
Well, Texas is still finished with a better record than the Mets. How's that? And they lost half their team.
So, looking at Texas, with all the injuries, it's tough.
Read that list off.
So, just to give you some names of guys who you probably won't see play for them again this year. Prince Fielders obviously jumps right off the page. Jurickson Profar, who I thought was primed for a big step up.
Last year, Baseball Prospectus, number one yeah. prospect.
Right.
Gone.
It's a shame what's happened to him. And, you know, Matt Harrison, not a guy they were counting on to start for them. Derek Holland. Martin Perez, who was lights out at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long list. Even, Mitch Moreland on the 50-day
deal. Tanner Shepherds.
Yeah.
See, there goes their whole rotation and their backups.
With that said, their roster, as presently constructed without the injuries, is considerably better than the Houston Astros. And they are terrible.
I don't know about the pitching, though. I don't think their pitching is.
I mean, it's close. Keuchel is the clear one.
Right. Subtract Yu Darvish from the situation. The other four, who are they?
It's nothing to write home about.
Who are they? They're nobody. They're backups to backups.
Right. And
these are AAA relief pitchers.
And somehow they've actually been worse than anticipated, too. And Colby Lewis is a guy who was at least serviceable while he was healthy, and he's been with all the injuries, he's done.
He's your prototypical, hope he pans out, number 4 or 5 pitcher that will end up, you know, being on waivers mid-season so we can bring up the kid.
But just,
and now he's forced into the number 2 role.
But just,
you can't win with that.
But just Darvish, Andrews, Rios, Chu, Beltre, Leonis, Martin.
Okay.
All five of those.
You name one pitcher. You name one pitcher. Give me another pitcher.
I agree. But they've underachieved. We've seen teams with no pitching.
Yes.
Do a little bit better than this.
Run scored, I would say they underachieved. They're not hitting the way they used to. And when you lose Prince Fielder, and then Mitch Moreland fills in for him, and you lose him too, you know, you just lost your 3, 4, 5 guy. I mean, that's hard to overcome.
Of course it is.
Very hard. Especially when you come into the season with the expectation, we're going to win the division. And all of a sudden, these guys start dropping like flies. What's that do to the mentality in the clubhouse?
It's obvious.
How the hell are we supposed to win now?
Right? I think that's their big problem. Yeah, they pretty much
They shut it down.
Packed it in.
Yeah.
Because they're putting enough talent on the field to not be 21
offensively.
Yes.
Offensively, I agree.
The
pitching-wise, no.
So what do you think? I mean, let's take a look at next year for them, then. Do you think they're going to just make a big comeback and be ready to rock?
I do. I think that team is good enough when healthy to compete. I think
the fielder's the big question, right? Is he going to be
the same guy next year? He'll be back next
year. I mean, yeah, they better. I mean, I think they would hope he isn't the same guy he's been for the last couple of years. I mean, he was not particularly good last year. And I mean, do you think they wish they had Ian Kinsler still? I do. I don't think.
I'd make that trade again tomorrow. Yep, wow. Absolutely. Prince Fielder for Ian Kinsler? Wait, now you got to understand, what do they have behind them? Jurickson Profar.
Yeah.
And Odor.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, I would definitely do that deal all day.
Keith and the Cowboy are just oil and water tonight. That's all right.
I'm wondering now, I mean, they're what, 20 games out?
21.
And they're behind two legit teams.
Yeah,
two really good teams. Anaheim and Oakland. They're not catching up. There's no chance.
Catching up?
Never.
They're not going to go 500.
So they're completely out of it. Now, do you trade Alex Rios? Do you trade Elvis Andrus?
Are these guys' deals done?
Well, that's what I'm asking.
I don't think
Rios is signed that much longer. Maybe two more years, if he's lucky.
I think if you can get something for a guy like Rios, you absolutely do it, right?
Well, that's what I mean. He's not going to be around for the long term, right?
Right.
I mean, he'd be around next year, but...
I mean, they're built to win now, though. I mean, they got Fielder coming back, and they have all these guys coming
back.
Well,
this is what I'm trying to say, though. If you can replace Rios with one of those prospects we just talked about, or even Elvis Andrus.
I mean, I don't think
he gets... Andrus particularly, because I don't even think he's that good. The kid's a speed demon. He's good defensively.
Great defensively.
But you got Profar and Odor. Those are both shortstop prospects.
Yeah, I mean, Andrus is a bird in the hand, though, and Andrus is probably better, if he hasn't packed it in. I mean, the kid's 25 years old. I mean, he's having a bit of a bad year while the team sucks.
265, two home runs, 22 stakes.
So, if I'm Texas...
I think Jose Iglesias did that. And he sucks.
If you look at his WAR numbers, right, I mean, it's... obviously he's having a bad year.
The kid can play shortstop. I don't doubt that. He's probably a top five Gold Glove candidate. Correct. As a matter of fact, did he win it last year?
Correct. I believe he did.
Yeah, he probably did. That's only because Iglesias didn't play short all year. Because he would have won. But anyway, what can you get for this guy?
He gets
the same thing we were talking about last week with the Cubs and Castro.
This is a different situation.
Is it though?
Look at their payroll. I mean, if they're doing that, then I think you go one way or the other. You don't just trade Rios and Andrus. If you're going to get rid of them, you have a freaking fire sale.
All right.
What's the point? What's the point of bringing in prospects when you got Fielder and Beltre, or at least on the back end?
Profar showed last year he's no fluke. He's a pretty good player.
Pretty good, yes.
Just as good as Andrus. Just as good as Elvis Andrus, offensively. Defensively, I'm not quite sure. Maybe Andrus is better defensively, but if you can get a pitching prospect and a hitter for Andrus, free up, I don't know, what are they paying him? $8 million a year? $10 million a year? You free that money up, now next year you can go get another pitcher. You can sign James Shields.
We'll see. They need the pitcher.
Odor at second and Profar at short.
That's the other thing I was going to say. Is even with all the guys who are injured coming back, that's no great staff. I mean, who's the two?
No, well, the Holland and Harrison. And
Perez.
I mean, those guys are not.
They're all fours, I mean, Darvish is fantastic.
Oh, legit ace. Legit ace, that guy. But
we can agree that they're a mess. For me, I mean, to your point, they thought they were winning the division this year.
Yeah.
These guys are all... No one's done for their careers, right? These same teams coming back.
Correct.
So, I mean, do they just not believe in the guys anymore? I give it one... Given all the money they've spent, I give it one shot next year with the same
roster. And I think they'll bring back 90% of that same roster. But there's two guys. Like, I don't think Beltre's going anywhere.
No.
Even Beltre, he'll be a free agent very shortly. If not next year, the year after.
That guy is...
He's still not going anywhere. He's the centerpiece of their offense.
Underappreciated throughout his career.
But you're bringing back him and Fielder. And if you can put out there Profar at short, Odor at second. Odor's proved he can play second base this season.
Absolutely. I like Odor.
Andrus, okay, he's a great glove. I'm telling you right now, that guy sucks as a hitter. He's a terrible hitter. The year they gave him that money, he had a career year. He hit home runs, he hit for power, extra bases, stolen bases. What's he doing now? His numbers suck. He's terrible. He steals bases.
You heard it here. You heard it here, folks. Keith Schmidt dumps Elvis Andrus. If it happens,
Andrus and Rio. See you later.
Remember, you heard it on the sports.
Gonzo.
So let's. That was enough about a team that's had 21 games. That's the most we've ever talked about.
That team 21 sucks games anyway. Back.
Let's trade
the freaking manager.
Let's make our predictions here for the rest of the season. I'm gonna go first. I'm gonna say it. Oakland, Seattle. I think Seattle catches the Angels.
Woo! Wow.
The Angels. I think Texas catches Houston in the battle. Battle for the cellar. So Oakland, Seattle, Los Angeles, Texas, Houston. Keith.
Okay. I'm going completely opposite. I'm going Angels are going to catch Oakland.
All right.
They take the division. Now, with that being said, they're going to make a trade for a starting pitcher. I don't know who it is. I'm not going to give you none of that stuff. But the Angels win the division. Oakland gets the wild card at second place, followed by Seattle, Houston, Texas. Boom.
All right. You good, Andy?
I'm going to continue being the most boring predictor in all of sports and say that everything stays the same. Angels.
Come on, Andy!
A's, Angels, Mariners, Astros, Rangers. But I do think that there's a very... I think I'll go ahead and say that three teams are going to the playoffs from this division, I think.
Three?
Yeah, I think the Mariners will get that second wild card.
Wow. All right. So that's a bold prediction, Andy.
I don't necessarily disagree with you there because I'm telling you that team has good pitching.
Yeah.
All they need to do is make a trade for a good bat, put them behind Cano, and they can take off.
So for what it's worth, that's if the season ended today, that's what would happen. So Andy's really...
He'd continue being more...
Well, he's really going chalk, right?
So if when you're asked to predict something, if you say that... Nothing is going to change forever now. That is the Andy. So thank you for the Andy. And thank you all for listening. So we're gonna head to another break. We'll be right back where we're going to look at some World Cup action. Take a look back at the World Cup. So for Keith, great stuff, by the way. You're always a pleasure. And,
Home run derby. Back.
Enjoy the break, and we'll be right back for it. Stay tuned to the Sports Lab.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Sports Lounge. Time to hit on the World Cup. So, as our loyal listeners know, we've been following the World Cup very closely, and things came to a head this week with Germany taking the whole deal. So we have the man, the myth, the legend, our soccer expert, Jeff Machado, in the house. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, what's up, Roger?
What's up, buddy? So Jeff's gonna give us some analysis. We're gonna dive right in here. So we missed about 10 days since the last taping, where we all made our predictions, and I believe every one of us was wrong. This was after the it was from the quarterfinals on. So first, to take a look at the final four, and a real surprising result, obviously, was the Germany Brazil game, where Brazil went down 5-0 in the first half, and just the hopes of a nation crushed. Realized they lost Neymar. Was he that important, Jeff? Is he the reason? Did the team just give up? Why don't you give us a breakdown of that game, because that was a real interesting one.
Well, if you had told me that all 11 stars for Brazil would get hurt, you would put the second team in there, and that they were going to lose 7-1, I would say you were crazy. So, as you all know, I not only predicted, but guaranteed Brazil would win the World Cup. So my word means nothing. I'm officially not ever saying anything about who's going to win a game again. Now, Neymar being out obviously was huge. He was probably the front runner for the Golden Ball before he got hurt. It's very sad to see him out. I kind of was wavering on their chances against Germany after that injury. But a bigger loss, I think, was Thiago Silva, who was the captain. And he shores up the defense. And if you watch that game, it looks like Brazil... It's like you play FIFA on your whatever Xbox or PlayStation, and it's like on the easiest setting.
That was Brazil's defense.
Yeah, they were not moving. It was amazing. Like, you just don't see that. I don't understand what happened. I don't they all got the flu. But I feel like I've always had this thing where the sports universe revolves around me. And whatever I say or things that I do are like very superstitious. You know, I had to watch the 93 Phillies with the same football in my hands. My dad took the football, and that's why they lost the Blue Jays. But anyway, I feel like if I hadn't predicted, guaranteed they would win, then there's no way this kind of, because it was like a joke of a game. And I had to record the game, and I got home really late that day. I managed to not hear anything about it, and I sit there with the DVR, being totally prepared to stay up till 2 a.m. to watch this game. And all of a sudden, it's 3-0 after like 10, 15 minutes. And it was the single best DVR experience of my life, because then I would just start skipping ahead and watching the score. And every time the score would go up, I'd rewind and watch the goal. And I'm like, no, surely not 5. 6? 7 goals? What is happening? It just doesn't seem real. But, you know, it was funny because every time I would come out of a goal, the announcer would just get more and more ridiculous with his description of the collective pain of the country, of Brazil. He'd be like, oh, and now it's 3, and this is a long way back for the host nation. It's 4! This is terrible humiliation for Brazil! Look at all the crying in the stands! And by the time it's 6, it's like, nothing this bad has ever happened to anybody. History of the world. It was so cool. But, yeah. Germany, I mean, they end up winning in the final. But I didn't think they were the best team in the tournament. I feel like that Brazil-Colombia game was really big. I think Colombia really missed a chance. I think Colombia could have won this tournament. I still think Uruguay could have won if Luis Suarez didn't bite a guy, but what are you going to do? I mean, Germany was the most solid team, the most boring solid team, aside from the fact that they scored 7 goals in that FIFA game, the video game of a semifinal, but I don't know. It was partially Neymar and Thiago Silva, and it was partially the fact that they were wearing white shorts. But Germany That's was right. also wearing white shorts, so that totally ruins my whole white shorts thing. Yeah, Germany, like, they had the white shirt and black shorts. It was like such a great kit, and they're all of a sudden wearing white shorts. Like, the whole world's going mad.
So in the other semifinal, I thought once Brazil went down, the novice fan in me thought the stage was set for Argentina. Right, they had the star player, the Michael Jordan, LeBron James of this World Cup. They squeaked by the Netherlands and then took a 1-0 defeat to Germany. What were your thoughts heading into that game, Jeff? Did you think Argentina was going to win that game?
The Germany game?
Yes.
I was a little worried because Argentina, for the past couple rounds, they've pretty much said that we're just going to play great defense and, you know, Messi's going to be a non-factor unless we can get him on a counterattack. And that's what they did. They did it against the Netherlands. They sat back, and you know, the Netherlands had most of the ball, and they won on the penalty kicks. Schneider, one of the best number 10s in the world for the last 10 years, choked on a penalty kick. He played terrible for the Netherlands. And it really kind of took away from Iron Robin's performance, which I think that he didn't get enough recognition for a possible Golden Ball winner. But Argentina basically willed themselves into the final because of a few magical plays by Messi early in the tournament and just with really solid defense. And that just wasn't going to work against Germany, and it backfired. They were a few minutes away from penalty kicks. But, you know, the better team won. I kind of had a feeling Germany was going to win that game. It's sad for Messi, but he ends up winning the MVP anyway.
So, how do you feel about that? Because, again, as a fan of, you know, some other sports, we don't see the MVP trophy awarded to the losing side very often at all. And particularly when, at least on paper, he didn't seem to do much. I mean, he scored 4 goals before the elimination round, and then none in the elimination round. And you're saying that's part of strategy. If you were given out the Golden Ball, would it have been Messi? And if not, who would it have been?
I think that James Rodriguez should have won it. I mean, he won the Golden Boot. He was the best player in the tournament. But I don't have a big problem with Messi getting it because his team got to the final, and without him, they probably wouldn't have gotten out of the first round of the knockout stage. So it's tough. Like you say, if you want to give it to a player on Germany, I mean, I guess you could have given it to Thomas Müller, but, you know, compared to Messi and Rodriguez, I think it wasn't even close. I mean, you got to give it to one of those two guys. So do you want to give it to the guy with the bigger numbers or the guy who played an extra game and could have gotten it? Like, if they had won a few more minutes, penalty kicks, God knows what happens, and Argentina's champions and Messi is legitimate, like, no argument MVP. But I don't have a problem with it because in the World Cup, it's more of an entire tournament thing. It does in, like, baseball and stuff, so they usually wait, or hockey.
They do it by series, right?
Yeah. Well, like, the Conn Smythe is for the whole playoffs. Am I right about that?
I don't know, unfortunately.
We don't really talk hockey here on the Sports Lounge.
We say that for the Canadian Sports Lounge.
we're only interested in real sports here on the Sports Lounge.
Absolutely, yeah.
But to your point, Jeff, the Super Bowl MVP is for the best guy in that game, right? It's not for the best guy in the whole playoffs. So
yeah, the World Cup doesn't really do as big as the final game is as a world event. It's like the Super Bowl. They don't really do a final MVP. It's a whole tournament MVP. And I don't have a problem with Messi winning it.
It was a little weird that he had to come out after losing, you know, the biggest game of maybe not his life, but certainly the last couple of years, and you know, he clearly didn't want to be there, and yet he has to come accept this trophy.
It was strange because in 2006, Zinedine Zidane got the Golden Ball, and he had been red carded.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
So, yeah.
This is like a trend. They like the uncomfortable moment.
Yeah, well, FIFA, they don't think about anything like Americans do, where we would give it to, well, maybe it makes more sense to give it to a guy from Italy because they just won. Really? Now let's give it to the guy who just headbutted a guy and got kicked out. Because objectively speaking, he was the best player.
I kind of like that. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't have given it to Suarez in
that? You know what? I feel like there's probably a lot of guys who wanted to vote for Suarez.
Yeah.
And he could come out with the Hannibal Lecter mask on. They could wheel him out, you know. Anyway, that's a bad joke, I guess. Right?
They really should make him wear one of those things that LeBron, like those mouth guards that some of the basketball players wear.
Like the Rip Hamilton, the whole face thing.
Speaking of Suarez, I did notice a headline that he was it traded or just straight up sold to Barcelona? Was it Barcelona, Jeff?
I actually have not heard that news yet, Roger.
Oh. Well, we'll talk about it on the next show, but I believe he has changed teams, and he was not on Barcelona before, correct?
He's been with Liverpool.
Yep, he's now 99% sure he's on Barcelona now, so we'll have to give you the hard-hitting analysis on that next week. But.
Well, that's good, because if he's in Spain, there's going to be a lot, you know, more lenient press. It won't drive him to the brink of insanity and assault. Maybe he'll be calmer and he gets to play with Messi, and who knows, he'll probably score 30 goals next season.
You know what, Jeff? I got it right in front of me here. So let's get the analysis right now. So Barcelona, he was sold to Barcelona for 75 million euros.
So that makes John Henry happy. He gets rid of the biter, he gets 70 million bucks. Someone's going to have to explain it to me how it works in Europe, because, you know, you got different clubs, you got different leagues, but they can loan players out and they can sell players. It seems very complicated.
Yeah, it's a transaction system I really don't know anything about.
He's now signing a 4-year deal with Barcelona. He's 27 years old. That's right in the physical prime, so if he could keep his mouth shut, as they say, it looks to be a good deal for Barcelona, getting a stud like him. And one would have to assume that it was a bit of a discounted price, given what just happened, and given that he's suspended for 4 months.
Well, you got to say Barcelona's the early favorites in the Liga next year. They just lost to Madrid this season, but it's really hard to care about La Liga after the World Cup just ends. It's like such a sad, empty feeling.
It is.
You just have to just deal with the fact that Germany is going to be the champions for 4 years. So sad. I don't even know why I hate Germany. There's got to be a reason, like some sort of deep-seated reason, but maybe I think it's the way they play. They were complaining on the sidelines that the game wasn't ending fast enough.
Oh, right.
They had a guy rolling around on the ground for 2 minutes, and they're like, what? Yeah. Whistle, blow the whistle. They're the epitome of European football and everything that America hates about it. But they won, so congratulations to them. They didn't have anybody get ejected for biting. They did a good job.
All right, and so just looking back at the whole, you know, we've spent about a number of weeks talking World Cup, and, you know, I for one enjoyed the heck out of it this time, and can't wait for the next one. And I'm going to be taking more of an active interest in soccer. Maybe I'll be watching Mr. Suarez on Barcelona this year. But any moments or takeaways for you, Jeff, from the World Cup? Just kind of quick hits, things that surprised you, things you liked, didn't like, whatever.
Well, I didn't like the hand that Ivory Coast was dealt. I feel like they were a very dangerous team. They could have gone far, and they basically played three dominating games in their group stage, and they didn't make it out of the group because of a few poor mistakes and a terrible penalty call against Greece, of all nations. Like, Greece has no business getting out of the group in the World Cup. But also Mexico, you know, Mexico had, you want to talk about the best goalkeeper went to the German guy, Neuer, who was pretty great, but the most exciting player that I watched in this World Cup was Memo Ochoa for Mexico. He played absolutely out of his mind. And they are beating the Netherlands, who end up in the semifinal with 2 minutes to go, and they end up losing the game on a dive in the penalty box, which is just terrible. But you got a feel for that guy. As far as and things that I'll remember as this is a really great World Cup. I feel like the group stage was amazing. Almost every game was meaningful. You know, I thought Russia was going to go far, and their goalie made just mistakes in basically every game. Just blew one guy just blew an entire nation's chance of getting there. I don't understand how that happened, but I feel bad for him. And as far as the goals, there was a lot of amazing goals. A lot of people say it's because the ball that they used this year, it's like a new ball with like a little bit more seams, and the players liked it. There was something like 40% more goals scored in this World Cup than the last one. And the Messi goal against Iran was just exquisite. I'll never forget watching it ever. Just 30 yards, left-footed, bending around two guys right into the corner. He could get the MVP just for that goal alone. And, yeah, last thing, United States. They had a chance against Belgium. They played really well. They beat Ghana. They drew against Portugal. They should have won that game. And for the next World Cup, I feel like you're going to see a lot more young, well-developed players who have played in really big leagues in Europe coming over to play for the United States, and hopefully they still have a goalie as good as Tim Howard and maybe get to the Final Four in the next one. As long as Klinsmann is still the coach and he's still saying that they have no shot of doing it.
Excellent. I know for me, again, not nearly the experienced viewer that some of us are, just the lots of drama. I don't know if every World Cup is like this, but there seem to be more goals scored after the 90th minute than would seem possible. So you have 85 minutes of nothing and then four goals in the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy.
It really fun to watch. I mean, really, you you had to watch the whole game. And I thought it was great. And do you have any takeaways from the cup? Anything you remember?
Yeah, you kind of stole my point. I liked that, you know, every time the World Cup comes around, we make all these, you know, Americans make all these jokes about soccer where nothing happens and it's boring. And we ended up having this tournament where, like you said, all kinds of late game drama and all these goals scored. I like seeing that kind of dumb conventional wisdom proven wrong.
It was definitely a good World Cup for the popularity of the sport in America, even though the Final Four was kind of not what it could have been drama-wise, and the United States lost in the first round. It had enough where a lot of people are watching soccer now, I think.
Absolutely. And Jeff, I thought you did a fantastic job breaking it down for us here, and we certainly appreciate it. And Jeff is going to be a regular contributor to the Sports Lounge. We're going to, you know, our listeners have spoken, and they said that we need more Machado. And so,
well, I look forward to coming back as the World Series of Poker expert.
Oh, excellent, excellent. You know, I could actually, I know a lot more about that than I do about soccer. And now from, you know, as our good friend Keith said, from football to football!
Yeah!
Well, we're not going to be covering any football tonight, but we want to, here at the Sports Lounge, want to let you know what our schedule is going to be like. So, NFL season starts September 4th, I believe. Gives us approximately 8 weeks prior to the start of the season. So starting next week's show, we're going to take a look in depth at each division and give you a division preview, very similar to what we're doing in baseball now. We're going to start next week's show with the AFC West, where Andy will spend his time defending Peyton Manning against against our insults. But no, seriously, we're going to try to get some guests on, and we're going to spend a half hour to 45 minutes on each episode, just breaking down these divisions. And the one, you know, similar to the World Cup this year, the NFL is truly the theater of the unexpected. There's, you know, the way the league's set up, there's a lot of parity, so you get a lot of worst to first situations, and we're going to try to call those for you, and we're going to give you our opinion. So please stay tuned for that, and tune in next week for that.
With that, we're going to go to our final break, and when we come back, we're going to be taking a look at the UFC fight between Machida and Chris Weidman, where the Cowboys' pick streak came to an unfortunate end, and where Chad Campbell blew the result for him all in one fell swoop. But Jeff, thanks so much. Andy, thanks so much. And we'll be back, so stay tuned.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Return the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richard and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Check it. Yo, I be buying V's, so all my girls be I and C's. Coming backstage, dying to get pleased. You got me, I rock the Versace and linen. While you spot and grinning, we're bunch of
yeah, welcome back to the Sports Lounge for our final segment of the evening. We are taking our weekly MMA review with the man, Chad Campbell. How you doing, Chad?
Doing good, Roger. How you doing tonight?
Oh, doing good, doing good. We've had a heck of a show so far, and I've been really looking forward to this segment to talk about my lost pick and the last UFC. So, but to give you guys a little backstory, if you didn't listen to the last episode, Chad and I are pretty competitive with each other, and coming into this event, the Cowboy had sort of been winning the picks, and I went with the underdog, I went with Machida, Chad went with the chalk, with Weidman, and I didn't tell Chad that I was DVRing the fight, and that I would be watching it after a 4th of July party I was attending, so party's breaking up about 1 a.m. I'm ready to go home and watch the fight, and I get a message on my phone. I turned off all my, you know, my Bleacher Report team stream stuff so I wouldn't find out what happened, but I got a message on my phone and it just said Cowboy down. And it was from the gracious winner, Chad Campbell. So I knew the result of the fight before I watched it, but great call, Chad, and what an excellent fight! Why don't you give me your thoughts on the fight in general, and you know you take your time to brag because I know you're gonna.
I was really overconfident after the first two rounds, because Weidman seemed to have the fight very at hand. With the first two rounds, he was doing some damage to Machida. Nothing I would say major, where Machida looked threatening, but he was definitely winning those rounds decisively. Was taking him down and was looking really good, looking like he may coast to kind of like a 50-45 type victory. And then in the third round, and especially the fourth, Machida just came back with a vengeance. So the third round, I actually had slightly for Machida. The other couple of the judges still had that one for Weidman. The fourth round, though, absolutely was a Machida win, where he just sort of took it to him. Weidman looked winded for the first time in his UFC career, and Weidman really looked like he was in serious jeopardy of losing. And that brought together an epic fifth round where you really didn't know which way this fight was going. You knew Machida kind of had to go for broke. With about a minute left in the fifth round, he does a good flurry. And even though Weidman was covering up, I thought Machida might be able to land a knockout strike. But Weidman really showed a lot of resilience. And after that flurry, which Weidman was covering up throughout, but Machida was still landing flush. Weidman kind of gave him a face and told him to bring it on, and was able to weather the storm. And he picked up a unanimous decision victory. The scorecards, there was a couple of 49, there was a 49-45 and a 49-46 scorecard. But that kind of, I would say the score of this fight doesn't show in some ways how close it was. And it's probably in contention for the best middleweight UFC title fight of all time.
Great fight. Great fight. I mean, I think the standard bearer for that, while maybe not the whole fight being great, was the Anderson Silva versus Chael Sonnen. The first fight was just one of the more fun things I've ever watched, because I was rooting so hard for Silva, and it looked like he was done and, for him when he slapped the triangle on with 2 minutes left after losing every second of the fight before that.
Those were the first round is incredible with the early flurry from Sonnen, and then the fifth round with Silva locking on the triangle and getting the submission. But in between those three middle rounds is a lot of Silva kind of on the ground,
right,
and Sonnen laying on top of him. So
no, absolutely.
But yeah, I think those are probably your top two, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. And this was, you know, the reason I had picked Machida was, the rationale was, I liked that it was a five-round fight, and I felt like the longer Weidman was on the feet with Machida, the more of a chance was that Machida was going to catch him. And it's what happened. It's what happened. You just couldn't get him out of there. And knowing the result when I was watching it probably took a little bit away, but I mean, even that, he almost got him out of there. I mean, it was really touch and go for Weidman. And he showed me a lot. He proved to me. I didn't think the Anderson Silva fights were total flukes. I think Weidman was a good fighter. I just thought at this stage of his career, the Machida might be a little too seasoned for him and just a little too, I mean, really, really difficult challenge for Weidman. I was very impressed. He proved himself as the best middleweight in the world. And, you know, he's an easy guy to get behind. Both of those guys are. They're both class acts. And, you know, Weidman's a young guy who's going to be hopefully carrying the torch for a while. That division isn't particularly deep. And
no.
He pretty much, I mean, he beat the next best guy in the division, I think, pretty clearly. And you know, I would assume at one point or another we're going to get Weidman Silva 3 once Anderson comes back and has a couple fights. I heavily favor Weidman in that at that point. But overall, yeah, just a fantastic fight. A really good call by you, Chad. I couldn't believe that he was a 2-1 favorite. I just didn't see it. I thought that with Machida's pedigree and how good he had looked since dropping down, that I thought it was a pick'em fight, and it ended out being just a fantastic fight. The rest of the card left a little bit to be desired, for sure. So you know, we really pegged the Rousey fight. I mean, I know it was the widest odds in a championship fight in UFC history, but we both got behind Ronda and went out on a limb there. But I didn't think I thought it would last longer than 16 seconds.
I mean, we both predicted a first round finish, and with 16 seconds, it was even quicker than I think anybody could have imagined. she basically just bull rushed Davis. Davis didn't know what happened. Rousey got a knee and then did a judo throw, and it was curtains for Davis. She kept trying to take down the referee probably 30 seconds after the fight was even called off. So complete domination from Ronda.
Yeah, and I think what we had it really brings to light what we had talked about previously about Ronda having a lack of viable challengers in the UFC. Kat Zingano is probably the best of the bunch right now. I think Rousey's probably about a 6-1, 7-1 favorite in that fight. The UFC did sign Holly Holm this week, who, if you're not familiar with her, is probably the best female boxer on the planet, who transitioned to MMA a couple of years back. If she could figure out a way to keep Rousey standing and not getting a judo thrown to the ground, she could definitely give her a boxing lesson. They're also talking to Gina Carano, who, again, if she could keep Rousey standing and somehow cut her leg off and make 135 pounds, that could be a decent fight.
Yeah, I think that at least would be intriguing to me. If they had that, I know they were throwing around kind of the January 3rd date, is what I read for that. So that would be, if they could pair that with another kind of lower level, even like a lower level championship fight, like a Mighty Mouse title defense or something like that, that'd be a pretty stacked card.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I don't know if do you agree with this, Chad, that until there's a viable challenger, she doesn't belong headlining, main eventing pay-per-views at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I know the one of the big things coming out of 175 was Rogan asking her about 176 that is now canceled.
Oh yeah,
that kind of controversy where Dana flipped his shit in the middle of the octagon. I just can't see, unless it was a fight with really Carano, Kat Zingano, or Ms. Cyborg. I would say beyond those three fights right now, I don't think she really should be headlining a pay-per-view.
Yeah, 100% agree. And I think we talked about it last week, but the calls for Cyborg have certainly increased since that destruction. I think Rousey didn't really do herself any favors by winning that fight so quickly. In the grand scheme of things, I think the competition's going to become steeper, as steep as it can quickly. Dana doesn't like it to look like he's protecting anybody, and
right.
That non-performance by Davis kind of made it look like, you know, Rousey's going to fight the tomato can of the month. So, but overall, great main event. Not the best card in the world. The card took a hit with the stuff with Struve in the locker room. I mean,
yeah, apparently he took a hit down on the floor in the back.
He had that. Was it that heart problem or something?
Yeah.
So it's actually he may never fight again. I mean, that's a scary situation, right? That he had the heart condition, and then to pass out like that before a fight. Is that scary? Uriah Faber looked good on the prelims main event. I thought it was telling that they put him on the on free TV, definitely trying to drum up business for the card. I mean, his fight, even with the Struve fight, would have been the third most, you know, most anticipated on the card, but he continued to beat everybody except the champions. that's his thing now. But
yeah, he's definitely, when you the term gatekeeper, he feels like he fits right into that mold. I mean, I know him and Dillashaw have actually talked about maybe fighting each other. But we'll see. I mean, I think Dillashaw has to get through Brown first again, and right, then we'll see what happens.
But that's no easy task. I mean, I know, you know, those rematches are always funny in that, you know, sometimes it's Frankie Edgar, BJ Penn, right, where this guy, you know, Edgar just has his number. I mean, right. Penn, you know, Other times, you know, a guy like Barao, maybe he took the kid a little lightly. And, you know, maybe he's going to maybe make some adjustments and, you know, can win that fight. I mean, I think that's a pick 'em fight when that comes. But, yeah, not much else to say. Great middleweight title fight. I hope people tuned into it. And as far as what we have on the horizon, with the cancellation of the Aldo Mendez 2 pay-per-view, the next pay-per-view is not until August 30th. That's the Cowboys' 35th birthday, by the way. So send your cards in to Place to Be Nation. Dillashaw Barao too. We do have a real interesting fight night coming up. We're taping this on Monday evening, the 14th, and this Wednesday. You know, one of my favorite fighters in the UFC, two of my favorite fighters in the UFC, really, one who's real near and dear to my heart, and it's not really, you would think it's because of the nickname, but it isn't, I just love the guy. Cowboy Donald Cerrone against Jim Miller, two guys I absolutely love watching fight, two guys who don't lose too much either, headlining a fight night. How do you see that one going, Chad?
I think this is a tough fight to kind of gauge because these are two guys that, like you said, they don't lose much. And when they do lose, they lose to pretty steep competition. I mean, I know two of Cowboy's losses is to Benson Henderson and a couple of his other, who did he? He lost to Anthony Pettis. Yeah, he lost to Showtime. And, so we're not seeing the type losses for both of these guys. Cerrone, I would guess, would probably want to keep it on the feet, have a slugfest type fight with this. I think Miller's best strategy may be to try to get it on the ground and grind it out. But I think Cerrone will probably catch him. I'm going to go out on a limb, pick Cerrone here. And I'm actually going to say first round TKO.
All right.
Which may be a little risky, but yeah, I think Cerrone will just have a big flurry of punches, kind of rattle Miller, and then Cerrone's the type of guy where if he knows you're in trouble, he will not let up whatsoever until something happens.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, both these guys are real. It's a really interesting fight in that they're both really well-rounded, right? So both of them are... Cerrone's a better striker, but Miller's not a bad striker by any stretch. And Miller is a better submission guy, but Cerrone is a very good submission guy. So it's... You know, I think both guys are going to be comfortable wherever the fight goes. I think Cerrone's longer, right? He's taller and he's longer, and I think that's going to be the difference in the fight. I think Miller to do damage is going to have to get inside, and I think he's going to eat a knee, he's going to eat an elbow, he's going to have trouble getting inside Cerrone's reach. I don't think it'll be a first round knockout. I think Miller's too good for that, but I'm going to go with the Cowboy by 30-27. Unanimous decision across the board. I think Miller's going to be too tough for his own good in the fight, and you know, the cowboy he's got good power. He doesn't have great power. It's generally more of a, you know, depending upon the fight. But I think against Miller, it's not one shot's not going to get Jim Miller out of there.
No, yeah.
And I'm picturing a steady diet of jab right hand. Miller getting frustrated. Cowboy keeping him on the end of the jab for the three rounds, so I'll take the Cowboy by unanimous decision in a good fight, and then in the co-main event. I mean, this is really, I mean, these are two very good fights. Both of these fights are better than anything other than the Machida Weidman fight that was on the other, that was on the $50 card. But Evan Dunham and Edson Barboza in a lightweight fight. Two guys, both highly touted, both, you know, have sort of seen better days. How do you see this one going?
Yeah, so I guess Barbosa, just coming off his loss to the previously mentioned Cowboy on the last Fox show, And I think this is kind of a good proving ground fight for him. They certainly didn't give him an easy task with Dunham. But Dunham's a guy that when he first kind of came up in a UFC, he looked really poised and had a couple of great... I always remember him beating Efren Escudero because that was right around the time when Escudero just came off of the Ultimate Fighter. Seemed like a really kind of up-and-coming fighter, and Dunham just absolutely demolished him. But since then, he's had some ups and downs, lost some interesting fights that he probably shouldn't have lost, but has had some nice wins mixed in there. But now he's coming off of a 2-2-fight losing streak in his last two fights. It was to Rafael Dos Anjos and Donald Cerrone, but... that's kind of no shame, but if Barboza does defeat him here, I think he's in jeopardy of really getting siphoned down the card, and I think Barboza will be able to kind of rein him in. This is kind of where I'm leaning my 30-27 vibe towards, with Barboza kind of grinding him out to the decision.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. It's an interesting fight. Both guys... I mean, Dunham's got five losses in his career, right? The Cerrone, Dos Anjos, and TJ Grant. He's lost three of his last four fights. And, I mean, TJ Grant was supposed to fight for the title and now has this concussion that just is never going away, unfortunately for him. Dos Anjos is a stud. Dos Anjos is kind of similar to Barboza, and we've talked about Cowboy. Before that, lost to Melvin Gallard by knockout. I mean, Melvin Gallard, he can knock anybody out, right? So, yeah, he's fast hands, first round. What can he do? He lost a very contentious split decision. I remember the fight to Sean Sherk. It was his first UFC loss. Sherk was the former champion coming back after some time off, and Sherk did some lay and pray. I thought Dunham won that fight. So, I mean, my point is, for the most part, he's only lost to the best of the best. And Edson Barboza lost to Jamie Varner. Now that's a bad loss in my opinion. I mean, he was about a 5 or 6 to 1 favorite in that fight. And,
yeah.
I think that loss woke him up a bit. I'm pretty torn in this one. I really like Dunham, and I want the kid to put it together. They call him a kid just because of the way he looks, but he's 32 years old now. We have to remember that. I'd like for him to put it together, but I'm with you, Chad. I think Barboza. I like Barboza by stoppage. I think Dunham has never lacked for balls in the octagon, right? I mean, that's one thing.
He's got a pair,
and the kid knows losing 4 out of 5 fights, regardless of the opposition, could spell his ticket to the World Series of Fighting. So I think he goes out on his shield here. I think Barboza's just going to be a little too fast, a little too technical. Dunham's going to bull rush him. Barboza's going to take him out in the second round. That's my prediction. But should be an excellent card. I'd check that out. Chad and I will certainly be back for you. To recap it next week. And it looks like we have a number of fight nights coming up here, Chad. And then I apologize. Although the next pay per view is until August 30th, we have on July 26th. what I'm going to call the fight of the year right now. Right now. Don't know how I forgot about this. Matthew Immortal Brown, Robbie Lawler. No way this isn't a top 5 fight of the year. That's a worst case scenario for that fight. It's just those guys are awesome, and there's a reason they're putting it on free TV, because maybe these guys aren't the biggest names in the world, but anyone tuning in, they're buying that pay-per-view on August 30th. So we'll definitely be previewing that for you next week. That's a pretty stacked card too. It's got our what do you think of Rumble Johnson? I love Rumble Johnson.
from my home state. He's from Dublin, Georgia, originally. A guy that's been up and down, and he's kind of has an interesting test versus Little Knox. So we'll see how he does in that. That's a good second from the top fight in its own right.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Little Nog would hold a hell of an advantage if they end out on the ground, but that's not really his thing either. So that should be, you know, good technical boxer versus just powerhouse rumble. And then Clay Guida. Clay Guida's fun to watch. That's another fight that's going to be a lot of fun because Dennis Bermudez is fun to watch. So great card. I mean, we shouldn't preview it right now, but it's a great card. I'm beyond excited for Matt Brown and Robbie Lawler. I have no idea who I'm going to pick to win the fight because both guys, I think, are just I've seen both of them just on the edge of disaster come back. I mean, do you remember Lawler's fight when he was outside of the UFC against Melvin Manhoff? Have you ever seen that fight?
It doesn't ring a bell. The one fight that I remember from Robbie most outside of UFC is when he beat Scott Smith on the Elite
Hands of Steel.
The first CBS Kimbo card.
Oh, man, yeah. The Manhoff fight. Melvin Manhoff is a K-1 champion. Just he's a MMA guy who can't fight on the ground at all. So, but if he's standing up, he's better than anybody. And he hit Lawler with everything but the kitchen sink. And Lawler is just an inch away from being done. And Lawler just ends his life with a right hand. It was awesome. You should watch it on YouTube if you haven't seen it. Because I mean, he is like literally. Lawler looks literally one strike away from just being completely done. He's just gotten his ass kicked for the whole fight, and just one right hand, and he just knocks Manhoff completely out cold. It's just awesome. So, anyway, that's Robbie. So we'll be back. We'll be back next week with a preview of that card, an in-depth preview. You know, Chad and I agreed on the picks this week, so I won't be able to get my revenge until the UFC on Fox 12, most likely. But Chad, thanks so much for joining. It's been a great year of UFC so far, and we have a lot more to look forward to.
All right. Look forward to it, Raj.
All right. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Sports Lounge. Hope everyone enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed doing it. You know, we had some real colorful colorful stuff from our man Keith tonight. He was he took the reins from Machado when Machado couldn't be here for a couple of segments, and he really showed his comedic side, and we need that. But as always, stay tuned for next week's episode of Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge, the Thinking Man Sports Podcast here at Place to Be Nation. And in the meantime, tune into all the other great podcasts and columns on placetobenation.com. So with that, Cowboy out.
Naked and we're all sexy for the last. last 15 minutes, baby. That's what's been happening.